Right. Hi, everyone. Linda, compulsive overeater. And thank you so much. It is with much gratitude that I am here with all of you and to be able to share some experience, strength, and hope. And just this is a wonderful meeting. And thank you, Stacey, Mary Joy, Gloria, Judy, Sam, Lucia, and everybody else who makes this meeting happen today. So grateful to be here. Thanks, Judy, again for the invitation. So I want to start with the bottom line up front for me, which is I have never been more. I've never needed this fellowship more than I need it today. It is very clear to me, and I have never been more grateful to be in this fellowship than I am today. And I absolutely owe that to the fact that this fellowship and the 12-step program has given me a relationship with a higher power that I never expected and just couldn't have imagined 15 years ago. So that's how I feel. Right regularly every day when I wake up. Never needed it more, never more grateful to be here. I will not spend much time on my history. I am a what I call a garden variety compulsive overeater. I stole food. I ate in secret because I was a good girl, because good girls don't do things that they shouldn't. And I had a feeling in my heart that this was not a good thing. I am also, I define myself as a stress eater. So when stress showed up, whether it was a big project at work, whatever it was, some big high profile thing, I ate. So it was, as we say, hand to from bag to mouth, bag to mouth. And that's how I got through a lot of life. So I've been in the program about 15 years, just over. And I am, as I said, incredibly grateful, because for me, I feel like it is a wonderful life. I have a wonderful life, and I often say, I experience heaven on earth. Whatever heaven is, I don't know, but when I'm in recovery and working my program and life is good, I have heaven on earth. So what I want to do is spend the time I have left with you, kind of sharing, I don't want to call them lessons learned, but works in progress. These are things that I've noticed about myself since I came into the program, about the program, and how I have grown in the program, and different practices. I'm a big proponent about experimentation with recovery practices. If someone says this worked for them, I am open to say, wow, well, maybe this too could work for me. So this experience, strength, and hope is a wonderful gift that we give each other. So the first, as I've alluded to, is before program, I could not say the word God. Could not force me. It was 6 months in the OA before I could actually say God, because I had such disdain, contempt for religion, for all things that were organized, anything spiritual, pictures, God, images, all of it. I didn't buy any of it. I'm a science. I was trained as a scientist, and it's all about the data. And this woo-woo stuff, no tolerance for it. And this program, as I said, has given me a relationship with God, whether I call it, one day I call it God, higher power, loving higher power, the universe, the source, whatever it is real for me. And I experience it, and it helps me get through every day, whatever that is. All right. So I want to share the second thing I have learned, which is don't leave no matter what. So I was at a Region 7 business assembly. I was a few years into the program, and someone said, hey, we need a region delegate. And I said, I don't know what that is, but sure, I'll do service. And I met this incredible person who had been in 12. I was in 3 years, he had been in 12. And I said to him, how do you stay under, how do you do this for 12 years? And he said, Linda, it just keeps getting better and better. It just does. Don't leave no matter what, and always be working the steps in one form or another. Be working with a sponsor or a sponsee, or as you do your 10th step, you're working all the steps, maintenance steps, all of that, but you just stay in the program. And I'm grateful that my disease has not been successful. Not even, I should be, not tempting fate, but it hasn't been successful saying, oh, you don't need to do that, or let up on your program. So again, I keep that in mind early on. I learned that message. The next one is every day I have a daily spiritual plan or a daily spiritual program, and it's or some very close version thereof. Whether I'm home, traveling, whatever I'm doing, it is a getting up. It is reading the literature. It is writing. it is some form of meditation, even if it's, please help me get through this day. And I have found that some form of quiet time during the day, whether it's in the morning or in the evening, is incredibly important to me. I need quiet. And I love my husband, but he has the TV on all the time when he's up. So this 5 a.m. slot's really important, but I can, step away from that and just have some quiet time. I do part of my daily spiritual plan is that I weigh and measure my food. I write down what I'm going to eat the night before. And I do that because, frankly, it keeps my head quiet. It just keeps it quiet. My disease cannot negotiate, well, a little more of this or a little more of that because, this is the plan. And if it changes, it gets the what's written down gets changed. So I want to talk about the disease. And segueing into that, somebody said at a meeting and I this week, and I wrote it down, says, she said, or he said, the disease learns from our mistakes, our disease thinking. So for example, if I don't go to bed on time, and I'm tired, my disease learns from that. And it says, oh, she's vulnerable. Her defenses are down. She didn't go to sleep on time, or she didn't do this part of the meditation, or so my disease learns from my mistakes. And I thought that is just so true. It's just easier. It's like losing that muscle you build up. It's just easier to not do it the next time. So I have to be really careful. The last really significant binge I had was at a wedding, and I've probably shared that on this meeting, is that my disease, I'm sitting at the wedding, round table. The dessert table, mistake number one, sitting across so that I could see the dessert table, right? So my assigned card was facing that. I should have moved it around to the other side of the table, but I didn't do it. And my disease told me when a particular food item came out, oh my God, you haven't had that in 35 years. You can handle it. You can handle one. And that was such the lie. That was such the lie. And the scarcity. If you don't go get one now, they're going to all be gone. So I have to watch when my disease will try, my disease thinking, I should say, will try any angle to get in there and convince me it's going to be okay. And I have to watch really carefully for that and make that phone call, get up, change my seat, something that shifts the thinking, because the thinking is what's going to lead me into trouble, basically. Something else I learned in recovery is, it's going to sound strange, but I think about this from both my smile and my wave have changed in recovery. So when I go back and look at pictures of me before program, before fellowship, I see somebody who forced smiles in all the pictures I have. I look forced. My waves are like this. I look at pictures and I experience, I look at pictures post-recovery coming into program, and I connecting with people, I never connected with people. And when I connect with people, the smile just shows up. I am great. And it's a completely, and the wave is now this like kid wave. Hey, everybody, it's so good to see you. I'm like, what is that? But I believe that is part of how the program works through me and how I engage with people, because I, as we say, I'm not the same person who walked in 15 years ago. I want to talk briefly about character defects. Or negative coping mechanisms, or whatever you need to call them. I'm not big on labels, so I will sort of, I'm very fluid in what I call things. Thankfully, my disease tries the same old patterns over and over again. And mostly my character defects all come down to, what do others think? I'm not good enough. I haven't done enough. I don't have enough money, all of these things. That is kind of the circus that happens in my brain. And it's pretty much the same thing. My brain will go from, you made a mistake at the office, to what is your boss going to think, to you're going to get fired, to you're going to be on the streets, and you're going to be homeless. I mean, that's the progression, and it happens really fast. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But I am grateful every day that when those patterns show up, I'm like, oh yeah, there it is again, right? Fear of people pleasing. Oh, right. Economic insecurity. Oh, yes, I moved the goalposts. I thought this was enough, but now this isn't it. I am grateful for now that those are the same patterns that show up. And And when I think about it, it's kind of, I know it's a serious program. It is. I'm like, oh yeah, right. Been there, done that. Let's move on. And it's just easier. Okay. So a few years ago, when Judy invited me previously to share, I shared with you the I Love You project, which is, growing up, no I love yous, no nothing. And it was how I went, it's in a, probably it's recorded somewhere, how I learned and experienced the courage to say, start saying I love you to my parents, and how now they mostly, my mother says it back, my father says we do too, but I'll take it. Every once in a while he slips and says I love you. So my parents are now 83 and 90, my father will be 90 next month, and they are both failing. One is failing cognitively and one is failing physically. So I was there for 10 days a couple of weeks ago, and my father said out of the blue, so this is the next version of the I Love You project. He says, I didn't have a childhood. I said, do you want to talk about it? No. Are you sure? Yes. Okay. So I took that to higher power. It's like, help me out, help a girl out here. I need some help. And what came back to me, and it was a few days before I left, what came back to me is my higher power said, this is a man who told you growing up that you have never worked a day in your life and you don't know what a day's work is. And I had to unpack that in OA. OA allowed me to unpack that. And so here he is saying he doesn't have a child. You don't know how much longer you have with this, with your father. You need to tell him all of the things that he did do right for you as a child and thank him for it. Dang. Okay. It was wonderful. It was a moment, right? I thanked him. He was really, that's how my program and my relationship with my higher power has, I want to say blossomed, because I don't have a better word for it. All right. So the other revelation that has come up recently was, how did I become a food addict? How did I start using food as a coping mechanism? And my sponsor has said for years, the why is not important. You just are. Okay. So I have used food to take the edge off. In the beginning, it was just to take the edge off. And then it became to shut down the system. It became food coma because it worked. It worked beautifully. Food coma, pass out, wake up next day, no problem, start over. I understood from writing and exploring this concept in some childhood work, which I resisted, that I grew up in an environment in a household that had no, never saw my parents have any problem. Like they never wrestled with anything. It was always, but we never saw any coping skills from my parents. Nothing. No problems, no emotions, no nothing. And so when things started popping up in my life, because I'm a good girl and drugs and alcohol were like bad, food was a solution. And I started understanding again, learning it a different way, no coping mechanism. Turn to the food because it's a way for ease and comfort. All right. So in building to this one, so about 13 months ago, I was still working. I have since retired. About 3 months ago, I retired. The messages I kept getting while I was working for years have been, you aren't pulling your own weight, you're not doing enough work, you're making mistakes. You have a guilt cloud. I had this little guilt cloud that followed me around because I wasn't doing enough work. And I saw other people and I'm like, I'm coming home and I'm not completely exhausted, therefore I'm not doing it. And it was pretty awful. And it was, it's almost like OA took care of so much, but it didn't take care of the root cause of whatever that mess of emotions was. And what showed up was, I'm a workaholic. How, who'd have thunk it? I started just one day, Googled 12-step program for work, and workaholism showed up. And that has, so in the 13 months that I've been in that program, that has really helped me because now I feel like I'm confronting my addiction on two fronts. And it's really been a game changer. And I think it's allowed a lot of the gifts that I'm going to wrap this talk up with. So the last sort of area is meditation. And my sponsor for years was telling me, meditation, meditation, meditation. Now my Workaholics Anonymous sponsor is like, meditation. I'm like, okay. So it really is for me the gift that keeps on giving throughout the day. A few years ago, because of this fellowship and this, and largely through the meditation, the two-way prayer meetings I started going to, two-way prayer has been enormously helpful. And God writes back these most, as you know, for those of you who do it, it's the most loving, kind directions and experiences that I could imagine. And it's wonderful to have that sort of reinforcement and good orderly direction. So the next part of meditation was this idea that when something pops up during meditation, it's like, oh yeah, thinking. And this is not new, and this is out there in the meditation sphere, thinking. Oh yeah, who's going to take the dog to the vet? Of thinking. It's just this non-judgmental approach to interrupting the thought path. And so what has happened is now when I'm driving down the street, I'm not meditating, but I'm having this experience because now this guy is acting like a jerk. Oh yeah, judgment of thinking. So now it's showing up in regular life. I'm like, okay. I have taken to-do lists to my higher power, and this long to-do list to higher power in meditation, and gotten good orderly direction on, this is your priority. Don't overdo. Pick the two or three things. I'm going to help you pick them, Linda, and here's what you need to get done today. What I want to impress upon you is a new version of meditation I had never heard of before a few months ago, and my sponsor suggested it, and it's called Tonglen, Tongling, Tonglen. And it is this concept where when I run into suffering, whether I am, usually I am suffering in some way, right? I'll tell you what, here's one. I opened up the trash can this morning and saw my husband's wrappers of things in the trash. And not just one or two, but a bunch.
3 minutes,
Three
Linda.
minutes to go. Thank you. I was like, okay. I didn't do it, but this is because I didn't have time before this meeting, but here's what I would have done. You sit and you let the storyline go. It's this concept. You let the storyline go and you just breathe in the suffering, breathe in the discomfort, breathe in the uncertainty, bring in the fear, resentment, whatever it is. And then you do it for everybody in the world who might be feeling the same thing. So it's at that moment you start breathing in the discomfort of the uncertainty of everybody in the world who might be going through it because it's part of the human condition. And in doing that, you breathe out well wishes and free from suffering and love and beauty to everybody because we're all connected. And it's just been this beautiful way to experience, whatever's going on in the television that sets me off, I can breathe it in and I can experience it and I can say, okay, everybody is suffering. There's suffering, all kinds of suffering in the world. So I want to end with this. There is this line from the AA 12 and 12 on page 149 about Rule 62, and Espansi and I were talking about it just in the last few days. And the line is, don't take yourself too damn seriously. And I love that line because OA is starting to give me, OA and the other fellowship is starting to give me back more of a sense of humor. And this Espansi and I were joking, if you will, about picking trash, picking food out of the trash and picking off the coffee grounds and the dog hair, making sure that there were no coffee grounds and dog hair. And when you can laugh about that before you eat, when you're like, okay, that's what we've done. There's a lot of humor here. And it is so, not just, it's a great joy to be able to wear the program loosely and for long. I want to end with a plug for service. Service is incredibly important. That guy many years ago at that Region 7 assembly said to me, love and service. And service is a tool, not an anchor. So don't do too much because it's not an anchor, but it's a really important tool. So the last thing I heard this week that I thought was great for this meeting at the close in the last few seconds was whatever you hear, whatever the disease is or the crazy you hear in your head, if you tell yourself the opposite, whatever the disease tells you or the crazy you hear in your head, if you tell yourself the opposite, you are closer to the truth. So I am so grateful, Judy, again. Thank you so much for inviting me to be here, everyone. Thank you so much. I look forward to your shares on the line.